Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We'll routine to border scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
But if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hee hee! King Shaziz the Turbo! All rise for King Shaziz the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, Our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions, just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey.
The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed, and hence clamorous to be led to safety, by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, most of them imaginary. H. L. Mencken. Hello friends, John Le Bon here on Saturday, January 30, 2016. In this video, I'm going to illustrate what I see as the difference between two related but distinct groups of people. Truthers on the one side and skeptics on the other. As I will explain, there exists no simple binary between the two, but instead a diverse spectrum. However, the distinction between trutherism and skepticism can be very useful, as can an understanding of where the two types of people or methods of thinking overlap. And to be sure, there is an overlap, which is why the distinction between truthers and skeptics may not yet be obvious to some people involved in this scene. By the end of this video, the distinction I am making will be clear. Then it will be up to you, the viewer, to come to your own conclusions about the ideas being put forward. First, some definitions. The term truther has become an epithet, and few people today, even within conspiracy circles, self-identify as a truther, as is the case with the term conspiracy theorist. So what do I mean when I use the term? I'm referring to anybody who rejects or challenges the official story of an event or phenomenon, but accepts or propagates an alternative theory, which itself is still based on information which comes from the same authority as the official story. One classic example is the case of 9/11. A truther will likely reject the idea that Osama bin Laden was responsible for 3,000 people's deaths that day, and instead posit that it was the work of another group, such as the US government. In this sense, a truther does not accept the official story of the event, but does still believe in an elaborate story, one which is premised on the same foundational claims as the official story, i.e. that 3,000 people died that day. The official story is that OBL killed 3,000 people, the alternative theory is that the US government killed 3,000 people, and both stories are based on the fundamental premise that 3,000 people died. In short, truthers tend to reject the headline narrative given by the authorities, but accept the claims which underpin them. The simple definition for a skeptic is somebody who is inclined to question or doubt accepted opinions. However, the term skeptic is often misused by people who are not, in actual fact, all that skeptical, and so although its definition is rather simple and straightforward, it bears further explanation. Put simply, a skeptic is somebody who demands solid reasoning and evidence for a claim before accepting it, no matter what the claim or who is promoting it. Whereas some so-called skeptics will criticize alternative theories but then take the official story at face value, a real skeptic would require solid reasoning and evidence before accepting a claim, no matter whether that claim was coming from a person off the street, a government outlet, or anything or anyone in between. In this sense, a real skeptic places the burden of proof on whomever is making a claim, and is happy to hold a belief in no theory on any particular topic if none of the theories presented or seen are considered to be based on solid reasoning and evidence. Real skepticism involves critically analyzing each aspect of a story, official or alternative, and accepting only that which is supported by solid reasoning and evidence. It is vitally important to note that in many cases, this means a skeptic may accept none of the stories on offer. With an event such as 9/11, the overlap is obvious. The typical 9/11 truther will point out that there is no real evidence that Osama bin Laden was responsible for what happened that day. When presented with mainstream news and government evidence which say bin Laden was responsible, the typical truther will point out that these outlets cannot be trusted at face value and that, when scrutinized objectively, their claims are not supported by solid reasoning or evidence. Up until this point, the typical truther and a real skeptic are in agreement. Both refuse to accept the government or mainstream account of events without objective evidence and solid logic to support the claims being made. However, this is where the distinction begins. Whereas the truther may then go on to believe that it was the US government who were responsible for flying planes into buildings on 9/11, the real skeptic will ask what evidence is available to prove that any planes did in fact fly into buildings that day. The typical truther will respond that, "We have video footage of it." The real skeptic will point out that this footage comes from the same mainstream media which the truther has already accepted is not trustworthy to begin with. The truther will respond that thousands of people saw the planes themselves, and the real skeptic will ask, according to who? Have you spoken to any of these people? The truther will respond that thousands of people died that day. The real skeptic will ask what evidence this claim is based on, or if it is simply another story from the same government and media whose official story the truther has already realized cannot be trusted. At each step along the way, the skeptic is not denying the truther's claims, but merely asking for the evidence which supports the claims. And in each instance, it turns out that the truther's evidence comes from the same outlets and sources as the rest of the official story. This is the chief distinction between truthers and skeptics. Whereas a truther is liable to accept the foundational claims of the government and media, but then reject the conclusion or overall story, the true skeptic is consistent and questions every aspect of the government media narrative, including the foundational claims. In the case of 9/11, this means questioning the notions that there were planes involved or that 3,000 people died. How could the US government be responsible for an event which never really happened? And this is why the distinction between truthers and skeptics is so important. The typical truther actually believes in the most important parts of the official story, even though they think they are challenging the official story. By accepting the foundational claims of the official story, and then propagating a supposedly alternative theory on top of it, the typical truther is in fact supporting the official story, and therefore supporting the very authority they believe they are opposing. A real skeptic, on the other hand, truly challenges the authority in that he questions the fundamental precepts on which the authority's story rests. Let's consider another example. The official story to explain the role of government in our lives is that the government is our friend and here to protect us. Both the truther and the skeptic can agree that this account ought to be challenged. What evidence is there that this mob of men, who monopolize the use of force and the issuance of currency, and enforce taxes at the threat of a gun barrel and prison cell, truly care about the best interests of the average person? Take the specific case of the intelligence agencies such as the CIA. The official story is that it exists to ensure the security of the citizens from internal and or external threats. Both the truther and the skeptic can agree that this is not supported by any objective evidence or reasoning, and that the government-controlled intelligence agencies can and will only exist to benefit the government, and not the people. However, the truther is then liable to go on to believe that the CIA is in fact spying on and infiltrating the regular populace, and possibly even targeting the truther himself. He will cite mainstream newspaper articles and so-called government leaks, which claim that these agencies target individuals who question the government's stories and motives. The skeptic, on the other hand, will ask what evidence there is to actually support these claims, other than the so-called evidence which comes from the very same sources the truther has already agreed are not to be trusted. If the government and mainstream media can't be trusted when they tell us that the CIA is infiltrating enemies, why can the government and mainstream media be trusted when they claim that the CIA is infiltrating the regular citizenry? Again, the skeptic is not denying the claims of the truther, simply asking for the evidence which supports the claims. And, once again, when the truther admits that he bases his beliefs on the same sources which he has already conceded are not to be trusted, the skeptic points out the glaring contradiction and hypocrisy of this stance. Looked at another way, the typical truther cherry-picks which parts of the mainstream government account fit into his worldview and accepts these parts on face value, while ostensibly questioning the rest of the official story. The real skeptic, on the other hand, questions every aspect of the authority's accounts and demands objective, credible evidence to support any claims being made. This is exactly why the typical truther is liable to suffer from paranoid delusions that he is being personally targeted by the government agencies. Even though he has rejected the official story that the government is his friend and spies on his enemies, he has fully accepted the alternative theory that the government is his enemy and spies on him, despite the complete lack of evidence to support this belief. Of course, he may, in theory, be correct, because an absence of evidence does not necessarily mean that a belief is false. It is, in theory, possible that Osama bin Laden controls an operation to fly planes into buildings in New York, even if there is zero actual evidence, other than what comes from the authority, to support such an outlandish claim. The issue here is that whereas a skeptic is being consistent in his approach and worldview, the truther clearly is not. He is believing what he wants to believe, and being selective about which parts of the authority account to take on face value. In future videos, I will elaborate on what Leon Festinger meant when he described cognitive dissonance, whereby humans are liable to suffer from mental stress when they simultaneously hold opposing beliefs. This is the mental stress which truthers suffer from when they reject mainstream newspaper articles in one breath, but then cite mainstream newspaper articles for evidence that paid shills exist and are out to get them. Their worldview, which includes an inflated sense of their own importance, requires that the government care enough about their online activities to send paid shills to track and disrupt them. But their knowledge of the untrustworthiness of authority narratives, such as those found in mainstream newspaper articles, leads them to experience a cognitive dissonance when citing said articles to support their worldview. This is why truthers are liable to get very upset when a skeptic challenges their so-called evidence that they are under threat from paid shills. It brings to the surface the very cognitive dissonance which forever bubbles below the surface of their paranoid psyches. And this is why real skeptics may benefit from keeping a healthy distance between themselves and truthers, even though there may at first be some overlap in their mutual challenging of the official story. Rusted on truthers, especially those who buy into paranoid delusions about being targeted by paid shills, play right into the stereotype that anybody who challenges official stories is a paranoid delusional, which is a long-standing trope of mainstream media and education. Ultimately, the truther and skeptic approach information from opposing angles. The skeptic still wants to believe in a narrative and will cherry-pick the information to suit himself, whereas the skeptic will base his beliefs on the objective, empirical information available to him, even if, in the case of a lack of available evidence, this means holding no firm belief at all about a particular topic. Put another way, the truther bases his information on his worldview, whereas a skeptic bases his worldview on the empirical, objective information. Their opinions may sometimes overlap, but their fundamental approaches to understanding and interacting with the world around them are in direct opposition. This is not to say that truthers and skeptics cannot get along or collaborate. It should be noted that truthers can develop their thinking into true skepticism over time. It is not uncommon for people, when first entertaining ideas outside of the official narrative, to fall into the trap of them believing alternative theories and the paranoid worldviews which come with them. This is where characters like Alex Jones and other fear porn propagators are so effective in gatekeeping people from the truth. Fear-based mind control is incredibly powerful, and those who fall under it may never escape, but it certainly can be done, and the true skeptic is wise to have patience with truthers, some of whom may eventually grow out of their trutherism. Finally, it must be made clear that although there is a clear distinction between trutherism and skepticism, in reality all people fall onto a diverse spectrum, and somebody who is truly skeptical about one topic may behave or think like a typical truther when it comes to other topics, without even realizing it. The easiest way to determine if your beliefs about any given topic are truther-like or truly skeptical is to ask yourself if your belief is based on sound reasoning and objective empirical evidence, or if it is based on sources which you otherwise would reject, but are taking on face value for this particular belief. The more of your beliefs which fit into the latter category, the further to that side of the spectrum your overall worldview is likely to sit, and the more likely you are to feel emotional discomfort when watching videos on my YouTube channels. Most people claim to be on a journey of discovery, a path of searching for truth and wisdom. How many people have the humility to openly admit, to themselves if not to others, that their entire worldview or method of analyzing information has been misguided? How many people can admit that they bought into narratives which overstated their own significance to the powers that be? Looking back, I can see that I used to be much closer to the truther side of the spectrum than I am today. I'm not too proud to admit that I used to buy into the alternative theories, and it has only been over time that I have developed my skepticism to the level that it's at today. This means that I will inevitably upset some people who subscribed to my channels at an earlier stage of my development, people who want to believe in their alternative theories, even when they know deep down that their evidence comes from the same sources they otherwise do not trust. As these people slowly leave my channel behind, and I recommend they do, my only parting comment is to wish them well on their journey, which is clearly along a different path to my own. As always, please leave your views and ideas in the comment section below, and bear in mind that I may use some replies for any future comment review videos. Remember that I have an extra channel, named John Le Bon Extra, where I have lately been uploading new videos and content on a regular basis on a range of...
In constant sorrow all through his days, I am a man of constant sorrow. I've seen trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. For 6 long years I've been in trouble, no pleasure here on earth I found. No friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. It's fairly well, my own lover. I never expect to see you again. Perhaps I'll die upon this train. Perhaps he'll die upon this train. You can bury me in Sunday Valley for many years where I may lay. Sleeping in my grave, while he is sleeping in his grave. Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger, my face you never will see no more. But there is one promise that is given, I'll meet you on God's golden shore. He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there,
are telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn, and nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
Hey, hey, can you survive the turbo? All those who can survive the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Roundtable at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, you can jump over there to www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html, where you can not only just talk to the Shaziz Radio crew, but the Awake Radio as well. So, with that said, hope you stick with me on this journey on this particular Knights of the Roundtable, because basically just trying to weed through a whole lot of stuff that's going on out there in the world. Things that are just really kind of hard to contemplate whenever you've been bombarded by so much information. First off, I'll start off by, I posted a video over there in the Shaziz Radio chat room. It's a video that was put together by four of the people left over there in the Oregon standoff deal. And regardless of whether or not this this particular incident's real or not real, or, you know, false flag or not, regardless of all that, what sparked off this whole thing in my mind as far as what I'm trying to talk about today is the fact that as I looked down through the comments of the video, I started noticing a really disturbing trend, you know. I'm going to have to backtrack a little bit, and I'm going to have to say a few things before I finally get to my final thoughts on why I was so disturbed about what I saw in the chat rooms. See, right now, and I've said this before on other radio broadcasts, I'm sitting in front of my computer desk and I'm looking directly at a framed copy of the United States Constitution. And at the top it says, "We the People," you know. At the base of this frame, in front of me, sits a Holy Bible. And off to the left of it, there is a little statue of an eagle. And it says, underneath there engraved, it says, "In God We Trust." Off to the right of me, I'm looking at a picture of my grandfather and two of his buddies from World War II. And they're in their military uniforms. And so I was raised up I come from a long line of military people, the people who had served their countries in Germany and Korea and Vietnam and different conflicts around the world. So I have a little bit of vested interest as far as, you know, myself being an ex-Navy personnel. And so with that said, I've been raised up with a set of morals, a set of beliefs, whether they end up being right or whether they end up being guided, as far as you know, when we talk about people being indoctrinated into belief systems and that's their view of what life is in general. Regardless of all that right there, these are the beliefs that I was raised up to believe as in the American dream, you know, that we fight for freedom and justice around the world. Now, one could argue that a lot of the conflicts from all the way back to World War I to World War II, maybe even going farther back to that, maybe all the way back to the founding of this nation. One could argue that there were a lot of things that were going on back in those days that, you know, between corruption and fights for power, that maybe this world that we believe as in America or the American dream isn't founded on a complete version of the truth. Maybe there were things that occurred throughout history that were wrong. There were a lot of people that were wrong. There were Japanese internment camps. There were land stolen from Native Americans. There were so many different things, slavery and so on and so forth. We could go all into so much of a vast matrix of all the different possibilities of everything that was going on, and that America was literally built on a lie, stolen from indigenous people whenever we first even got here. Maybe we shouldn't have been here to begin with, and so on and so forth. But regardless of all that, put us back up into the modern day age and look at myself when I say that I'm standing here with beliefs that I was raised on. I'm 50 years old now, and my entire life was, even if it was based on a lie, my belief system had fallen back to what I was taught as I was growing up, as the morals and decency and truth and justice, and that's what I believe in. So it doesn't necessarily make me right. It's just where I'm at in my life. And so when I'm looking into this video and I'm listening to the words of the people and I'm knowing what I've seen prior in the video, like the heavyset guy in the video at one point, he's telling people that if agents try to stop you from getting here, to kill them, right? He's that. Those words I saw and heard come out of his mouth in the video. But yet, the reasoning behind why they were even there to begin with was because they believed that the government was tyrannical, and they believed that other people were so fed up that everybody was going to finally, you know, make a stand. Well, the majority of the people who were there actually up and left whenever they were confronted with the possibility of being charged with felonies and going to prison and so on and so forth, and they were literally the last four people standing, and now they are told that they can freely leave, but they believe that the people who left before them were actually charged regardless, that the federal government had lied to them and said that they weren't going to be charged, and they were free to go home, and then basically all is forgiven and you just go on about your business and we'll just forget this ever happened. But that wasn't the case. And according to the narrative of the story, that there's already one dead individual who on one side of the spectrum had his hands in the air when he got shot, and on the other side of the spectrum he was supposedly reaching for a gun. Maybe there was a possibility that he was shot prior to and he was just reaching in pain and it was misconstrued for, you know, being shot. So with that said, looking in these comments and listening to what people said and in the language that they and the ways that they were saying it, the hate and discontent and just sheer disgust of what I was hearing, it disturbed me to my core, because I based everything that to this present day on a belief that the America was for freedom and justice, and that we were by law obligated, according to the Constitution, to defend our nation against all enemies, yet foreign and or domestic. And so, you know, we have an obligation to, if our government is out of control, to literally either change that government or, you know, overthrow that government if it's a tyrannical government. Now, are we to that point? I couldn't tell you, because what I get is a story from the mainstream side that says one thing, and I get a story from the opposite side, and I have to be, you know, making my decision on the information presented to me. Now, there's one other thing to factor in, that some of these individuals that were in this chat room may not even been Americans. They may not even been from this country. They could have been just somebody in there stirring the pot because they don't like America, you know. Or it could be even folks on this side of the deal trying to stir the pot to try to keep the people fighting amongst each other, you know, for ratings purposes, or even potentially, you know, destabilization of the nation to get us so mad at our government that we would literally fight against our government and go into a second civil war. So you got to factor in all of these possible potentials when you're reading this deal. But if indeed these were Americans that were saying the words that they were saying, and in the language that they were saying, you know, in modern day society, the F-bomb is just slung around like it's no big deal, you know. And words that were normally not said on the radio some time back are pretty much commonplace. And you will hear youngsters that will use just filthy language, just like it's no big deal. And so society has taken a big turn from what I was raised to believe that common sense and decency was, and how you would respect your elders and your neighbors and your friends and your country, and the true definition of being a patriot, and so on and so forth. So as I'm reading through these comments, I'm almost disgusted. I was disgusted, literally. I was, because I come from a long line of military individuals who have sacrificed their bodies, their brains, and their lives, and their livelihoods, and everything. And, you know, in some incidents, even lost their families because of post-traumatic stress syndrome, or, you know, mental disorders that came about from doing things that they otherwise wouldn't have done if they hadn't been placed in the position to go to conflict like they were. And so they did this under the belief that they were fighting for freedom and justice and trying to bring freedom to the world out there. And whether that's right or whether that's wrong, whether it's fact or fiction, that this is where they were coming from. This is where they were standing when they were on the battlefield. And so all of the things that they sacrificed were pretty much being treaded upon. It's the same thing whenever you see people burning the American flag. You'll see Americans burning the American flag, stomping on it and shredding it. And to me, that's so disheartening, because my grandfather had scars from the back of his heels on his feet, all the way up his legs, all the way up his back, and all the way up the back of his neck. Those two individuals that are standing in this photo beside my grandfather had the unfortunate displeasure of watching both of those two die. They were killed right next to him the same time when he got wounded, and all that shrapnel went up his back. Now, he was out there fighting for America. He was out there fighting for the United States Constitution. He was out there fighting for we the people. That's where my grandfather's heart was. Whether he was lied into getting there, whether the official story was truth or fiction, that is the purpose that he was in that uniform, and that's why he was standing there. And so when you hear potential Americans out there cursing other Americans out there who, according to the narrative, are out there fighting for freedom or making a stand against tyranny, and the way that they would talk about these people, that they were stupid or, you know, whatever, you know. Regardless, four individuals are standing out there today facing off the United States federal government. Nobody else is standing with them. Everybody else left. and they're reaching out and they're asking people, come here in peace and unarmed, and come here and stand in solidarity with us, and to tell the federal government that we're tired of all this corruption. We're tired of watching our citizens be shot down. Instead of having due process, they passed things like the National Defense Authorization Act, there's another one in there somewhere, the Patriot Act, and these are saying that they can detain people indefinitely without any trial or without any attorney. They can do things under these deals under the War Powers Act that they couldn't have done before. And so that is a concerning situation that all Americans should be worried about. And when the federal government appears to be getting out of control, your first step in a deal is to try to peacefully protest and allow the government to know that you disagree, that you don't like what's going on. But if you've watched any of these videos out there and the newscast, that you will see that even peaceful protesters are being abused, they're being pepper sprayed, they're being rounded up by police that are dressed like military individuals. And so the average Joe looking in from the outside would come to the conclusion that the federal government is out of control. That the police are militarized, that the governments don't care about the people anymore. And so, by definition, that falls under the Constitution, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, that the every able-bodied man, woman, and child in this nation are the standing militia, that we are here to defend our country, our nation, against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. But then in lies a problem. And the biggest problem that is going on is pretty much summed up in a video that I posted down there in the chat room called Truthers and Versus Skeptics. And it basically talks about the conspiracy theorist, the so-called tinfoil hat wearing crazies that are paranoid against the government and so on and so forth, against the guy who is going to look at all the facts and be skeptical of even the facts coming from either side because they want to get to the real truth. So essentially the skeptic is the real truther, all right? But the truthers, on the other hand, may cherry pick. They may pick a piece of the information that fits their narrative in order to keep the thing going. And then at that same sense, those same individuals who may be believing the facts could be being manipulated by propagandizing organizations on either side that want to further their own specific agenda. Now, whereas the skeptic is going, wait, he said there, hold on a second, let's look at all the facts, let's back up and let's see what's really going on here before we go getting crazy or whatever. And so when I look out here into the internet and I watch all these videos and I listen to all the words being said by everybody, I'm skeptical of even the skeptics. I'm at the point right now where I don't really know what to believe as to be fact or fiction anymore. And my concern isn't just for this nation here that we call America. You know, my concern is for the world in general, because there are individuals out there who love to stir the pot. There are individuals who make a lot of money stirring the pot. You can't sell no drugs if ain't nobody sick. You can't sell no guns and ammunition if there's nobody at war. And if you can keep the people in continuous disruption and continuous fear, well, you can sell them everything from generators to emergency supplies, and you can make out like a bandit. All you got to do is keep them thinking something is coming to get them. Something's coming to get their family. Now, I've already laid out all the reasons why I believe what I believe and the fact that I'm sitting in front of the copy of the United States Constitution and I have a Holy Bible sitting in front of me, which there are individuals out there who are even skeptical of all of that. You know, I don't have the answers to tell everybody out there how to fix this situation, and I even question the fact whether it is we have gone so far as society, away from what I believe, away from my belief in my divine creator, or my belief in the American dream, or my belief in patriotism or my nation as well, because there's so much we've been continuously bombarded by so much information, and trying to weed through the fact or fiction of it. We went down that rabbit hole, folks. Each and every one of us went down that rabbit hole. We don't know. We weren't there. Did we go to the moon? I don't know. I wasn't standing on the moon. I wasn't far enough to see if there was really somebody up there. I believe that we went to the moon because that's what they showed me on TV, and that's what I've been taught throughout school and all that kind of stuff. So now here I am 50 years old questioning whether or not there was ever even anything going on, whether or not what I saw on the news yesterday was fact or fiction, whether or not the alternative guys are right or wrong. Nobody out there can disprove my God, and I can't prove my God. But I believe that without my God, my world, as I see it, as I visualize my world, is falling apart. I'm watching America just completely deteriorate. I'm hearing the filthy language coming out of the younger generation, who at some point in time will be the leaders of the free world. And in other countries, I'm hearing the same thing. I'm hearing the pain, and I'm hearing the discomfort of all the individuals, and I'm hearing the anger and the frustration from the Native Americans all the way through Japan, through China, through Russia, through Canada, and everywhere else in the world where their displeasure with the government. They're so displeased, they're so frustrated, they're so distrusting. They don't believe anything that anybody says anymore, and they start to develop, whether it be a paranoia or a reality that their world is so messed up that it's just, you know, hey, it's a free-for-all. Everybody do what you want to do because it's total anarchy, you know. And what I see coming for this world, not just for America, I see something terrible coming for this world that I'm trying to steer us away from by the words that are coming out of my mouth. I'm trying to reach out and I'm trying to speak common sense from my perspective. And it may not be good enough. It may not be heard by enough individuals. And then enough people may not be taking those words and putting them into actions and enacting the solutions that it would take in order to fix this mess. Now, I believe that those four individuals up there made some serious mistakes in Oregon, all right? They're still there. They're whether they're trying to avoid prosecution and they're staying there out of fear of not going to prison, or whether they just believe that enough is enough and we're going to make our stand even if it costs us our life. Now, we could have a million men and women walking in there waving American flags, totally unarmed, to stand side by side with them and say, look, we're going to walk them over to the courthouse and we're going to have a free, we're going to have what the Constitution said. They're going to have a fair election with due process. But not too many people in this world, very few people will come out of side of their bubble to stand side by side in solidarity with somebody they don't really know or somebody they disagree with. But either that, the only other alternative is that these folks stay there too long and then finally the federal government gets tired and they go in to forcefully take them out, and maybe these folks shoot back and maybe they don't shoot back. Maybe they just get shot down. Maybe it's a Waco incident or a Ruby Ridge incident. All these different things, all these different possibilities could play out at any given time. Maybe another militia will show up on the scene, and maybe this whole thing will break out into a second civil war. I don't know. But what I can tell you is that by standing from the outside looking in at our nation, seeing what's going on and looking at all the events playing out all over the world, you know, Israel against Palestine and different Muslim sects against different Muslim sects and all the different things that you hear going on in Europe, you know, the refugee crisis all over the world, the the total dictatorship over in North Korea, and the difference between that and South Korea, the threats of nuclear war, the threats of armed conflict all over, the incidents out there in China where there are Chinese are building islands out there and they're gearing up for something, and everybody thinks that China and America and Russia and Europe and all the nations of the world are going to come together in a final conflict, which is World War III. I don't want to see it come down to that. I don't want to see nobody else die. I don't want to see anything else that is negative happen to this world. But this is the road we're on, folks. And there's nothing I can do. And the frustration comes from the fact that I don't feel like my words carry far enough to even make a difference. I get to the point where I'm so incredibly overwhelmed that I can't even breathe anymore, and I want to just walk away from the scenario. But every time I think about it, every time I think about just shutting it all down and getting completely out of this godforsaken matrix, this hellhole, this abyss that we call the internet, I think about my children. I think about my grandchildren. And I think about what kind of future that they will have if we, as the future founding fathers of this nation right here, don't make a stand here and now for what is definitely right. Those four people don't deserve to die for what they've done so far. Sure, they talked a lot of, you know, whatever BS or maybe even craziness. But there's still four human beings sitting out there. They're fear. They're in fear for their freedom. They're in fear for their rights. They're in fear for their safety. And they believe that they're standing there for justice. They believe that they're standing there for a document that some folks believe is so outdated that it was outdated the day that it was designed, and so on and so forth. But reality is, there are four individuals out there that may or may not face death. There are a lot of individuals out there who want peace. There are a lot of individuals who will bow to the government and bow to the military and bow to the system just so that they can keep whatever it is that they've got. Thomas Jefferson said the price to freedom is eternal vigilance. We've lost that here in America. Whether it be from propaganda or whatever, we've lost that. The whole significance of the Constitution, the United States Constitution, which was supposed to be the ultimate supreme law of the land. You can't even talk about the Constitution before a police officer or before a judge. The same individuals out there in this world, including the Congress and the Senate and the President of the United States, the same individuals who swore an oath to uphold that Constitution, which is a protection for the people, by the people, for the people. You can't talk about it. They don't want to hear it. And they reject the Constitution and they violate the Constitution. And when the people get so oppressed, when they're paying 40% of all their monies for taxes or even higher, and continuously gaining, when the national debt has reached $1 trillion and rising on a minute basis, and the people are beginning to see the pain. There are people out there in this world who are so much worse off than the American people. There are so many people out there who don't have homes, who don't have fresh water, or don't have electricity. They don't have the luxuries of America. But I have to tell you, folks, from being an American myself, from being a United States citizen and standing here and watching all this unfold before my very eyes, being an American is not all that it's cracked up to be. It is indentured servitude from the day that you're born and issued your birth certificate by the time you get your Social Security card and your driver's license and all the different things and your job and your taxes and everything that you've got to continuously contend with on top of trying to raise your family in a world to where your children are being indoctrinated away from the beliefs that you were raised upon. It's not easy. It is not easy being an American citizen. And for people to take their selves, their safety, and their lives on the line to stand up for what they believe that this country was founded upon, and to be mocked and ridiculed the way that they were in that chat room and many others out there, in my mind, it shows the complete deterioration of society in every nation out there. The younger generations, they don't have no problem getting in the chat rooms and the social media networks and using filthy language at each other and just being totally downright degrading and talking about the things that they would do, you know, to each other, or, you know, or the way that they talk about the women in general or children or whatever, you know, and the accusations that fly. It's just in my mind, it's incomprehensible how people can treat each other the way that they do. We put together the Knights of the Round Table to bring at least some sort of little spot of common sense to the world so that everybody could come to the table and voice their views and opinions and work things out and try to find solutions. But the platform is just that if nobody stands on it. If nobody can come to the table respectfully, then no treaty's ever signed. And if somebody can't keep their word, then no treaty's worth the paper that's written on. I hope that y'all understand what it is that I'm trying to point out to you. It doesn't matter which country you're in. The majority of all the people out there, they believe in peace, love, and freedom, and sovereignty. We need Russia to be Russia. We need China to be China. We need Japan to be Japan, and America to be America, and Canada to be Canada. We don't need some sort of one world government or some sort of one world religion. We just need a one world idea that everybody believes that in the truth of not doing harm to each other and to working together. We should be so much further advanced technologically wise in society that there wouldn't be no suffering out there as far as people living in squalor and disease and filth. There shouldn't be anybody starving in this world. There shouldn't be anybody dying in wars. We should be smart enough by now. We should have learned from history. All the wars of history never gained us anything but just a little bit of time. We've been allowed by, I believe, our Creator to run amok, to hopefully come together and sort it all out and try to get things right. But we push God out of school, and we push God out of our government. We push God out of our hearts. And so what we stand with is man. We stand with one another, and if your beliefs don't match my beliefs, then you're going to get angry with me. And maybe it'll even result in a conflict. But in reality, whether we believe or disbelieve in any kind of higher power or divine intervention, this story still remains the same. We're heading down a bad path. We're heading down a brutal path that someday our children will inherit these lands from every single nation. Your children are going to inherit what you leave behind. I get passionate about stuff because in my heart and in my mind I'm human, and sometimes I wished I wasn't. Sometimes I wished I was either just that cow that was heading to the slaughterhouse just to get it over with. Sometimes I wished I just wasn't even here at all. Because I can't understand how people can do the things they do to one another. I just don't get it. You either stand with those people and you walk them out of there safely and you get them the fair trial that they deserve, and maybe they'll go to jail. Maybe it won't work out, but at least 4 more lives are spared. At least you stood for justice. You sit back and you watch. Watch it all play out. Watch it go awry. Watch people end up getting shot. The guy that died out there by the FBI is shooting him down. He had family. And from what I understand, he had a whole lot of adopted children that he kept on his ranch, and he helped them out, and they helped him out. And from what I understand, he was a good man. And I probably would have done the same thing if they were shooting at my vehicle. I probably would have took off and told everybody to get down in the floorboard. And I probably would have drawn the fire away from my vehicle and got myself shot. But they didn't stop shooting at just him. They were shooting flashbangs inside that truck. It's on video. They showed it to everybody. Regardless of whether or not there were children inside that vehicle, they didn't know who all was in that vehicle. They were shooting tear gas grenades in there, and rubber bullets, and bean bags, and probably real bullets. I don't know. I wasn't there. All I know is what that video showed. I couldn't even tell you whether or not it was real. What I can tell you is to watch a man die before your very eyes is disturbing, because it's not the first time I've ever seen death. I've seen things that no man or woman should ever have to see. And that's why I'm in the state of mind and the state of heart that I'm in today. Because nobody has the right to take your life. It's yours. Nobody has the right to treat people the way that these folks in this world do. And I ain't talking about, it's not just the government. It's the people's fault just as much as it is the government, in my humble opinion. Because you teach people how to treat you. And if you can read that United States Constitution word for word, if you can read it all the way down and read all the signatures at the bottom, and if you can agree that you like what that thing says, and then you turn around and you let anybody in the government, your supposed representatives, go against what you believe, and don't stand up and speak your words, then you just give them your consent to do whatever on your behalf. This is a weird world, a strange world, a dangerous world that we live in. The only ones in this world that can fix it is you and me. We can't rely on corporations. We can't rely on governments. We can't rely on some miracle. Not even divine intervention from God himself. Even though in my heart that would be the best go, because right now mankind is so far out of control they just can't get their act together. So in my mind, it's time for God to show up. He'll show up on his own time. In the meantime, we got to live with one another. The atheist has to live with the Christian, has to live with the Muslim, has to live with the Buddhist and the Hindu, and so on and so forth. The blacks with the whites. Every nation, every race, every religion, every color. We're on the same boat, whether it be a flat earth or a ball in space. We're on the same boat, and this boat's sinking. It's sinking rapidly. It's time to plug some leaks. So I'm joined by Thomas and Raymond here, two wonderful souls that have been on this journey with me for quite some time. In my mind, two really good friends, two honorable knights. They could have left a long time ago, but they stayed in there. So you guys got any thoughts? Or did I lose the call?
You haven't lost the call. With that, I think it might be time for a station ID break, man. Give you a minute. Give us a little bit of time. Let the viewers have a minute before we get into any real discussion.
Sounds good to
That's
me.
That's a lot to think about, you know.
I'll throw on a really good song.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazoozradio.com. We had an interesting chat over the break there. Hope you enjoyed the music and got our second breath. And Thomas said something really profound during the break that I want him to repeat so that you all can hear what he said. Thomas?
I just said if the politicians that initiate these wars had to actually physically be on the front line to go do the fighting themselves, how many wars do you think we'd honestly be in?
I think zero. What do you think, Raymond?
I'm pretty dang sure zero. I'm 99.99% sure.
Yeah, if you look back through the history of a lot of different presidents, it never seemed like their kids were ever in any really serious danger. And where they did get military experience, it would be like in something like maybe the National Guards, where they don't really go as far away from the homeland as, you know, somebody who would have been shipped overseas to Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever, you know. So, you know, that's not discounting their service. I'm not trying to say it like that, you know. What I'm trying to say is there are certain circumstances. For example, I was in the Navy, and I wasn't in near the mortal danger that the Army guys would have been in, or the Marines who were actually on the front lines of the situation. Was I in danger? Yeah, I was in danger because things happen, you know. But as far as, you know, the chain of how close you are towards the front line as far how far back I was out to sea, you know, the danger was lessened as far as I'm concerned. You know, I give props to the Navy guys and the Air Force and all the different military branches out there for all their services. I love all the veterans. I don't care whether it's from the, you know, National Guards or, you know, what's the one for the out there in the water?
The Marines.
The ones that are right there on our shore.
Oh, Coast Guard.
Coast Guard, yeah. I give props to the Coast Guard because anybody who puts on a uniform in service of their nation, if their intentions are, you know, are right, you know, if they're just, if they're honestly doing it for the right purpose, then, you know, to me, any service to your own nation is a good thing. It's just whenever things start to get out of hand that, you know, when badges are put on chest and the chest pumps out and the head swells up and then, you know, I'm a cop, so I'm better than you, you know, you listen to me, you do what I say kind of mentality, then that's when the system, it just takes a turn for the worst. It doesn't matter whether it's the DEA or the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, or just your local police officer, or the Sheriff's Department, or any of the federal agencies, FBI, or whatever. It doesn't matter. When you have that authority to literally interfere with somebody's freedoms, you know, under the guise of justice, then you need to be on the side of justice at all costs. You need to uphold your oath as far as you swore to serve and protect and to defend this nation against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
And this includes even making sure you don't have a conflict of interest if you're involved in that.
Yeah. And this isn't just here in America. These people feel this. All the average people around the world feel the same thing about their own prospective government. Some folks don't have the luxury of a constitution to even complain about. Well, here in the United States, essentially, we don't really have that either. I mean, we have the illusion of this in front of us that we are free people and we have certain inalienable rights given to us by our Creator that, you know, but to stand in any courtroom and not knowing the jurisdiction that you're standing in, whether it be maritime law or UCC law or common law or criminal or civil or anything like that, to not even know what to say or not to say under certain circumstances, the average Joe, you know, is at jeopardy, and his his only place to fall back to for safety would be the Constitution. And if you can't quote the Constitution in the court of law, then there is no law. And when people see this and they feel the pain and the frustration of not being able to find some sort of remedy for what they feel the harm has come to them, then people get desperate. They do desperate things. They take up arms. They go protest. They do whatever they think that they can do according to their rights. But then whenever they get shot down or brutalized by the system, then it just tells the person next in line, you might want to think twice before you go protest, because the government says one thing and they do another. Does that make any sense, what I just said to you guys?
Makes a lot of sense to me, because that's exactly what happens.
I should probably say something on that whole comment that I made earlier that you had me repeat.
Yeah.
A lot of people take that as, oh, well, you know, they're just cowards, right? They're a bunch of cowards. He's calling all politicians cowards. No, what I'm saying, actually, if you really look at it, is that obviously, if they're not willing to fight for those, be on the front line to fight for the in those wars, and they don't really believe in the cause behind the war.
Exactly.
They don't believe in it enough to go and take a chance dying for it.
I agree.
People aren't willing to die over profit. They are willing to die whenever they say it's, you know, their kids that are basically being held hostage or something like that, you know. But they're not going to go over there and fight over a dollar.
When it all started, the leaders, they led the charge into battle. And then at a certain point, the leaders stayed back and all the pawns went into battle. And then they justified this by saying that, we got to keep continuity of government. We got to protect the generals because they're smarter than we are, and we got to keep them alive so they can tell us how to win this war. Wars aren't won, period. No matter what side happens, you take somebody's life, everybody loses. That's my humble opinion. But
you exacerbate the issue anytime you involve violence in it anyway, so when they say they've won, technically all they've done is they've delayed the inevitable, because at some point that's going to come back to bite them. Just like you said with those little girls that are like, we don't want peace with Israel ever. They killed our parents.
Yep.
Well, they just delayed being attacked by those little girls by killing their parents, because their parents were attacking, so now they're going to eventually grow up and attack them too. And the only way you can basically win a war against another people is complete genocide.
Exactly.
And by that I mean your win is your success, you're grading it on, you won't have to worry about them attacking you again later.
Exactly.
So, and I mean, are we willing to turn into Nazis and start exterminating people?
No.
No.
Because how long will it be before they come for you?
And there's
or me?
There's another point of fact right there, that when they do come for you, who will stand beside you? Will it be the same individual that doesn't agree with your perspective on the deal? Will other Americans stand up with other Americans and say, look, this is where we draw the line, this is this? Well, it looked as though out there in Oregon that they were going to stand together. But when the heat of battle actually occurred, and when people actually died, then you saw the difference. And in battle, if you're not willing to stand from start to finish throughout the entire duration of the deal, then you shouldn't have been there to begin with. And if your leaders can't stand there with you, then they shouldn't have been leaders to begin with. Now, I don't advocate any violence to do anything out there to get your way for any purpose. Violence and war should be a very, very, very last resort. There should not be, there should be some... You should exhaust every single possible peaceful means by which to get your point across. Before
right. Violence.
Yeah.
Violence is the last refuge of the incompetent. Do everything you can to keep yourself from being turned into a feces-flinging, screaming ape.
Yep.
Because that's ultimately all you become the minute you start slinging bullets, or you start waving around batons, or you start,
driving tanks into people and whatnot, is you just basically devolved into nothing more than a monkey fighting over a banana.
And that's essentially what it is, man. It's that simple. You know, war is hell. You know, you've heard many veterans say that. There's so many people out there suffering for choices that they either were forced into making or, you know, made on their own, that when you get back there and you have time to cool down and the adrenaline ain't flowing and the bullets aren't flying and you have time to sit back and contemplate on what you actually had to do and what you saw over there, then you're now forced to live within the prison of your own mind and try to either justify or survive what's going on in your head. It's a terrible thing. You know, even those folks who aren't in the military, you take that little guy that was in school that continuously got beat down in school because of the way he looked or the way he dressed. He suffers from the same PTSD that everybody else does. He's in fear that every time somebody comes to him and makes a quick motion that he'll flinch and cover himself to protect himself. To live in fear of whatever, you know, whether it be, you know, the government coming to get you or the boogeyman behind the door or whatever. It's no way for a human being to live.
No.
We're social beings by nature, and we need one another to socialize with. Even if we're arguing, you know, we can feel we're alive, but if we have to be living in fear of one another, if I'm in fear of the Soviet Union, Russia over there because they're supposed to be communist or whatever or not, you know, if I'm in fear of them coming over nuking my hometown and invading my nation, you know, because they're angry at our leaders and stuff like that. That's not a way to live. In reality, if I could actually stand on their soil next to their citizens and talk to them face to face, I would find out that those individuals are me. They're just like me. They're just the same people. They just want to survive. You know, they want to rake up enough money to go get a pack of smokes down to local market. They want to keep food on the table. They just want to be happy. They want to live free. Nobody wants to send their children over to another nation to die or to kill. And this is where our society has become. We have seen this throughout the entirety of history, and Raymond keeps saying these words over and over and over again, hoping that they'll stick in somebody's head. If you ignore the past, history will repeat itself. And we should have learned from all the past conflicts and wars, that we should have learned that war is not a good thing. War should be a very, very, very last resort. But nowadays it turns out to where war is basically like changing hats. If you don't like this government, destabilize that nation, get everybody fighting amongst each other, run in there and act as the savior and try to blow up the bad guy. And in the meantime, get the guys you want in office and you'll get your agenda through. Am I wrong? Is that not what's going on?
Yep, that's exactly what's going on.
Well, where does it stop? Where does the madness end and the solutions begin?
You know that phrase, the buck stops here?
Yeah.
You think somebody should do something about it, how about you remember you're somebody? This goes out to everybody.
I agree. So. And right now, I'm talking on a microphone. Okay, whoop-de-doo, big deal. I'm talking on a microphone, but I got a few people out there that like to listen to what I got to say for some odd reason. So I say it. I tell them how it is. I come from the heart. I tell them from my perspective. You know, I'm not the most popular guy on the planet, and I don't care. I'm not looking to be popular. I'm looking to get some sort of common sense flowing into the world, that one positive pebble that maybe affect our world in a different way than what we're seeing right now. And so I do the best I can with what resources I got to work with. And you, the person out there listening, on your mobile devices or wherever you're listening in at, you have that option too. You have a community. You have a voice. And some of you may be in more danger because your governments may be just a little bit more corrupt. And it may not even be the government that's corrupt. It may be entities infiltrating the government that are corrupt. You know, if you destabilize a nation, that government might have been a good government for those people. It might not have been the best, but it might have been a good one. And then what are they going to get in exchange once you get in there and you pit everybody against each other and get them to go into war? First, you're going to destroy their society and their buildings and their infrastructure, and then you're going to get their doggone governments fighting back to defend themselves to the last breath, and then you're going to rush in there as a savior to save the people, and you're going to create refugees, and you're going to create sickness and death and destruction in the process of this, and then you're going to justify your actions by saying something simple as, you know, we're sorry, we had collateral damage, you know. What is collateral damage? Collateral damage is men, women, and children. It's as plain as simple as that. It's not discriminating. It's indiscriminately killing anybody who just happens to be next to the bad guy. Where do we draw the line, people? Where do we draw it? You know, I listen to everybody out there. I do listen. I listen to the comments. I listen to the other radio shows. I listen to all the freedom networks. I listen to the truthers. I listen to the government. I listen to the mainstream. I listen to everybody. But at some point, when all the shouting's going on and all the madness and all the anarchy, at some point, somebody's got to stand up in that room and they got to say, hey, quiet, hold on a second, just hear me out just for a second. We can work this out, and we can work it out in a peaceful manner. The alternative is we just start swinging, you know? We just start swinging, we start throwing bullets, we just shoot it until the last man stands, you know?
Yeah, I will say, if you don't keep going until there's only one person left standing, then ultimately all war results in one thing. Everybody finally realizes that got to stop and sit down and talk.
Yep, and I think that before it actually gets to the worst case scenario, that would be the best time to do it, wouldn't you?
You know, why not start with talking?
All songs, one tin soldier rides away.
Yep. I'll play that if I can find it in my list. I'll play it before this shows up. But, you know, we come together here at the Knights of the Round Table. We put the invitation on the table for you to come here as well. You know, and we'd like to see more traffic here. If you believe in what we're saying, we'd like to see you here. We'd like to meet you. We'd like to know what you think. You know, we've had our trolls going through here. We've had our haters. We've had all kinds of, internal conflicts from all the different networks and stuff like that. It's not easy sitting out here trying to talk to people and discuss things. It's not never easy because there's always somebody who shows up who wants to be disruptive to what the whole idea was to begin with. You know, the Constitution isn't just a piece of paper to me. It was an idea. It was a set of rules that were set down before a new nation that would protect the people. Now, did it do a good job right out of the gate? No, there were a lot of things that occurred after the Constitution that were not justified in my mind. Excuse me. And if I had been back there in those days, I would have still been standing on the side of justice, because that's just what my nature is. I wouldn't stand on the side where, you know, you're going to do people wrong. And enslaving people or locking them up for unjust causes, in my mind, that's wrong. So, it didn't matter what time of history I was born in. If I would have been born much later, and I was still the same soul that I was, that I am now, I would still be saying the same words that I'm saying. You know, I say something to everybody, can't we all just get along, man? And you'll have funny people that, you know, it's funny. No, we can't just get along, it's funner to fight. Well, maybe it is funner to fight. Maybe that's what people like. Maybe they like the conflict. Maybe they like the war. But at the end of the game, and the the check comes in and you got to pay the bill, it was it worth it? That's the question. What was it worth what you had to do in order to win that game? If all we got left is each other and a crazy idea such as We the People, if all we got left is the memory of sovereignty and freedom, but yet we can't really live it, we just knew at one time that that's what we believed in, then what we got is total anarchy. Then I don't want to live in a world of total anarchy. I don't want to live in a world like a rogue warrior type society where only the strong survive and people run around murdering and killing each other. There's a series out there that I seen on Netflix. I suggest people go out there and watch that from start to finish. And it's called Jericho. I highly recommend that if you haven't seen this series, to sit down and watch that entire thing through. It's from start to finish. Because what you will see in there is a glimpse of what America would be like if certain things occurred. And then you take yourself out of America and you put yourself in other nations such as Syria and Iraq or Afghanistan, and you see that it's happening to them right now. They don't have the Constitution to protect them. They don't have the sworn officers and the sworn judges and the sworn Congress and the Senate and the sworn representatives of this nation to protect them. They don't have the rule of law to protect them. What they have is at the mercy of whether or not they can hide from whatever's coming at them, or whether they can literally defend and kill the enemy that is coming at them. Understand, people, that what can happen on one side of this world can happen in your backyard. And in order to fend that off, in order to steer that or nip it in the bud, like Barney Fife used to say, you have to be proactive. You have to be vigilant. You have to take the words of Thomas Jefferson: the price to freedom is eternal vigilance. You have to pay attention to what's going on around you, and you have to be active in your communities. You have to be active in your family. By the time that your child overdoses on some sort of illegal drug or whatever, it's too late to teach them about drugs. By the time your child accidentally shoots somebody else or intentionally shoots somebody else, it's too late. You can't reach out and pull that bullet back after you pull that trigger. And if we allow our nations of this world to go to the final conflict, which I believe would literally be World War III, and it's too late. And if our societies are so far over the cliff and heading down into the darkness of the abyss, and there is no way physically possible for us to come together as a one people, not a one world government, not a one world nation, just as a people, and back this thing off a bit, then where we end up at the bottom is of our own doing. It's not of the government, regardless of whether the government is corrupt or whether there's crime syndicates or secret societies. We the people are the majority. And we the people, when raised our voice loud enough, can do exactly what Thomas said. We can pull the teeth from the dragon while it sleeps. What do you guys think?
I think that's a beautiful idea.
What other options do we got at this point?
There's only ever two options: lie down and die, or fight back.
Yep.
The thing is, you don't have to fight with guns. You can fight with knowledge. You know, back in the late 60s, 1967, 68, 69, somewhere around there, a bunch of analysts got together and they predicted that the next world war
will be fought over food, not oil, okay, not land, food.
Well,
if, wait a minute, the thing is, there's several ways to grow food. I mean, they're doing it in California right now. People are growing gardens in their backyard. They're using a system called hydroponics. It requires very, very little water because you use the same water over and over again. I mean, they're growing in the space of 10 feet by 10 feet. They're growing enough food to feed a family of four. Year round. Why can't we just work together and get this knowledge out to people? Let them know, not just in the United States.
Well, that's brilliant, Raymond. You hit the nail right on the head. There are solutions. There are answers out there. We've been putting it out there for, God, how many years have we been doing this? We've been putting all kinds of ideas in every direction. We've been telling people about hydroponics, aquaponics, and hydrogen technology, and all different types of alternative energies, and all alternatives to the law, alternative medicines, and chemistry knowledge, and electrical, you know, things. We keep on posting links. We keep on posting videos. We keep on talking about this. We keep on telling everybody out there. And you know, if you listen to something and you absorb it in your head and it becomes knowledge in your mind, and you try it and it works and you believe it and you know that it can benefit somebody, pass that information on. That's the purpose of us even saying it to you to begin with. There's no reason for me to stand behind the microphone if it's never going to make a difference. If I'm not going to reach a single soul and benefit anybody's life, I'm just spinning my wheels in the mud. I'm wasting my time. I don't want to waste my time. I want to pave the stones that my children are going to walk on. I want them to have a smooth path into the future. I want them to, at some point, be able to live in peace and freedom and harmony with nature and just enjoy life, because if you can't enjoy life, what's the point? Nobody come here to this planet to suffer. Nobody came here to be sick, and they came here to enjoy, to learn, to grow, to expand humanity to our maximum potential. There's so much that we could accomplish if only we could get our act together. If we could build the dream teams in every single nation and build the things that we talk about and take the technologies and all the information that's already on the table. You go to any art class and you look and see the things that the kids put together. There wasn't just those kids that put those things together. There were factories behind the paper that was made. There were factories behind the glue that was made and the little sparkly things that they put on there. There were people in all over this world that actually came together in order to be able to give these children the opportunity to be creative with their minds. And to me, all of the people that made that little picture happen, you know, it's important. And it's just one little tiny example that doesn't even scratch the surface of what we could actually accomplish in any direction, health-wise or mechanical, or any knowledge that we could share amongst each other to benefit the society and not repeat the mistakes of the past. I don't know what more to say that hasn't already been said on the Knights of the Roundtable. I don't know how to find any more people that is any more brilliant of all the individuals and guests that have came on the shows and pointed out things. You know, in our own personal lives, and every single one of us sitting here at the table today, we've got our own struggles, we've got our own health issues, we've got our own problems and financial situations, and, you know, we still want to take a few minutes out of every week or so to do what it is that we do here, because we do still believe in the dream. That things can get better. The moment we all lose hope, the moment that we all lay down, like Thomas said, then the fight's over. You lost. Enjoy your slavery, because that's all you get. Am I wrong?
You're right. But I still believe we need to get together and, like you said, get the dream team together and come up with a plan to educate people on how to do things other than fight. You don't need to fight. You just need to learn how to feed yourself.
Yeah, if you're not mechanically inclined, but you're able to translate the information over to somebody else and be a good teacher, you know, teachers don't get enough credit. And as far as I'm concerned, maybe not even enough, compensation or pay for what they do. But modern day school isn't what school used to be. The teachers these days are under so much restraint to teach kids, you know, both sides of the story, you know, the real science and hands-on experience, because we've allowed our system to get to the point where there's certain individuals who control the school books, and only thing, certain things can be said, only certain things can be learned, and so whatever knowledge that child has by the time they come out of them schools, some call government indoctrination centers, is what they're going to base their choices on from there on out. I saw a little child one time with an army, toy army gun and an army suit, and he wanted to be a soldier when he grows up. And I asked him just out of curiosity, do you even know what a soldier does? And I can't even remember what the child said back. But in my mind I was thinking, so at some point in time, somebody justified to this child that glorified the soldier.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And in reality, being a soldier, while it is honorable to defend your nation, it's not something that you would want your child to go out there to do, because it means something serious.
Serious.
Yeah, dead serious.
Be prepared to do it, but do everything you can to avoid that situation other than actually giving up.
Exactly.
Look at every solution possible, you know? Especially the libertarian mentality of the win-win situation where everybody benefits, you know?
Where
nobody's upset.
I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I've never made a business deal in my entire life. I work as hard as I possibly can to make sure that everybody involved thinks they got the better end of the deal.
Right. So.
Well, Raymond Muddy had some good words to say about you, and I'm not going to say too much detail about what he actually said, but he pretty much said that you are more than fair to the people that work for you, that you would actually take less in order to make sure that everyone was provided for, and that's an honorable thing in any employer, and I wish that more employers out there in this world would lead by your example and bring their work crew in as a team. We're working together to benefit all of us, and your example would be, you know, the best case scenario for all these companies out there. If they treated their people the way that you treated yours, then there would be less turnover rate in all these jobs. There would be more benefits for everybody to go around, you know. This is what Muddy had told me about you behind the scenes, and you know, I won't go into total detail, but I can respect what he said about you because I've actually met you in person. I can understand the kind of person that you are at heart, and it's honorable.
Appreciate that. That really did.
We got solutions, people. We have solutions to all kinds of different ideas, and in the interest of everything that's going on out there, the only way that we're going to get these solutions out there is when people start doing it. When you start building devices that we're talking about, when you start getting materials together and start examining them and experimenting with them to find... there's more clues. Huh?
Yep. You know, how can we reach people and teach them how to do hydroponics or aquaponics? How can we do that to people that don't have a computer, that don't have access to YouTube? Anybody that has access to YouTube, there are hundreds of videos on how to.
Yeah, download them. Put them on CD. Print them out. Put it, pass them around. If you find something that is beneficial, like I found a video a while back, and it was talking about secrets of the alternator. All right, and it shows how to get 120 volts AC out of the deal. Well, I couldn't download it at the time, but I did manage to find through my brother-in-law a hard copy of it, which was the book that he got that teaches you how to modify an old AC Delco alternator and to build a generator out of. And so I made copies of that. I passed it around so that information, you know, could benefit somebody else out there. And you could copy that and pass that around. This is what you could do if you don't have access to a computer. Go to your libraries. Look up some of these books that are in the bin to be disposed of. Because, man, you could go to a library and you can buy books for pennies on the dollars, because as they're bringing new books in, they'll get rid of some of the old books. And some of the old books have better information in them than the new books. Build you a library of how-tos. Build you a library of how things work. Find you some old law books so you can study the law. And when you find something that somebody else could use, copy it off and take it over to them. Look, here's some information for you. I found this in this particular law book. You see what I mean?
Yes. It's a bad idea. In fact, years ago, when I was a young man, the late 20s, is when computers first came out. Well, after a while, when they got more sophisticated, people started setting up whole sets of encyclopedias. And I mean, some of these things were really old. I mean, back in the late 60s, some of these things dated back in the 40s, the early 40s, back when I was born. And I would buy these old sets of encyclopedias and read them, and it's unbelievable. Unbelievable the knowledge in these old books that you can't find anywhere on the internet today. You can't. It doesn't exist. But it's knowledge, it's technology that has died. People have forgotten about it. Aquaponics is nothing new. People have been doing it for 250 years. In fact, there's a theory that the Egyptians were using hydroponics 3,000 years ago. Aquaponics, I'm sorry, not hydroponics. Aquaponics is when you combine fish in the water.
Well, like I said, man, I've come across some books. There's a library out there called Aldell's New Electric Library that dates back to the late 1800s, and some of the things that you can learn in there are just incredible. And there's a lot of different volumes out there on how things work and science, old science books, all that kind of stuff could be beneficial for teaching you, you know, how to do things, how to garden and whatever. There's so much information out there, but it's just information if it's not being used. If you're not picking that how-to book up and building a shelf or, you know, doing whatever and trying it for yourself, then you'll never get those skill sets. And the worst possible time to find out that you don't know how to do something is when everything goes wrong.
Right.
You know, imagine if you don't know anything about first aid and you have a natural disaster and the system is so overwhelmed, you have to wait hours for an ambulance. You don't have hours for an ambulance. Could you literally sit there and watch your loved one bleed to death just because you didn't understand how to stop the bleeding? You know? These folks out here that spend so much time, you know, in the gaming community or watching Dancing with the Stars or on the social media network cussing each other out or on YouTube arguing back and forth whether who's right or who's wrong about any given conspiracy or belief system or political view, they're not preparing themselves for the potential of an all-out disaster. They're not educating themselves enough to be able to withstand something as simple as what happened down in Katrina, you know, with the hurricane and the flooding and all that kind of stuff. They weren't ready for it. And so their cavalry, so to speak, was the U.S. military and police coming in there and trying to keep order. And FEMA, whatever, Federal Emergency Management, how well did that work out for them? You know, the ones who were self-reliant might have did better than the ones who weren't. It's hard to say unless she was actually standing there on the ground. But what we got going on right now is a total lack of communication, disregard for one another.
I've got several friends of mine that went to New Orleans right after Katrina hit and was trying to help out. And they said, FEMA finally showed up. They were the biggest joke in the history of the United States as far as disaster help goes. They had no idea what they were doing. They had no equipment to help. They had nothing. All they had was money, and they were handing it out.
Well, in my humble opinion, the best person to have around you in a disaster is your neighbor.
You didn't know straight.
You know, if you got your neighbor, like me and my neighbor down around the corner over here, we look in on each other. If we haven't heard it from each other for a little bit of time, we'll go make sure everything's all right. You know, and during holidays or, you know, days where we're kind of prosperous and one of us has a little more food or something than the other, we'll take things back and forth to each other and we'll just take care of each other and we're keeping our eyes peeled. We sit around and we talk about current events and world affairs and spiritual beliefs and stuff like that. And, you know, we watch each other's back and we watch the signs of the times, and that's what neighbors do. You know your neighbor. If you don't know your neighbor, then you're missing out, you know. Your neighbor might be a flat-out lunatic. You may not want to know him. You may want up and move out the neighborhood just because of that one character. But you might be wrong if you try to judge the book by its cover and you don't understand this individual or where they come from, and you don't even make the attempt. Then in worst case scenario, your neighbor becomes your worst enemy. You know what I mean? So I say we take another coffee break. Anybody interested?
Yeah, did you find that song?
Yeah, I got your 110 soldier. It's first in line.
Got it.
You up for a music break, Thomas?
Sure.
All right. Well, everybody stay tuned. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Hope something what we said is benefiting you. Peace and love. Stay tuned.
Written long ago, of the kingdom on the mountain and the valley folk below. On the mountain was a treasure buried deep beneath a stone, and the valley people swore they'd have it for their very own. Go ahead and hate your neighbor, go ahead and cheat a friend. Bloody morning after, one tin soldier rides away. So the people of the valley sent a message up the hill, asking for the buried treasure, tons of gold for which they'd kill. Came an answer from the kingdom, with our brothers we will share all the secrets of our mountain, all the riches buried there. Now the valley cry with anger, mount your horses, draw your sword, and they killed the mountain people, so they won their just reward. Now they stood beside the treasure on the mountain, dark and red. Turned the stone and looked to move it. Peace on earth was all it said. Go ahead and hate your neighbor, go ahead and cheat a friend. Tell it in the name of heaven, you can justify it in the end. Judgment Day, on the bloody morning after, one tin soldier rides.
it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women more boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
The Terrible. All rise for King Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We had a really brilliant discussion once again on the music break there that I want to share with everybody. But, you know, we got to talk about a lot of hard things. Some things controversial, some things we just, you know, we're just people, we talk funny stuff, and we talk, you know, all kinds of, there's all kinds of information that we share with everybody out here. But the whole key to whole, all this purpose is to get things done, to get solutions on the table. Excuse me. And over the break, we came up with a good idea for a solution that we're going to try to get rolling. We thought about, because Raymond mentioned that there are people out there that don't really have access to the internet, and, you know, not necessarily that they're completely off able to get to the internet, but they just don't necessarily have their own home PC or something like that. Maybe have to go to the library and get some information. But to get how-to information in to people's hands, and, you know, things that maybe a little bit of how-tos on some first aid and all kinds of different survival things and different pertinent links and phone numbers of resources for people, we decided we're going to try to start putting together a booklet, and we're going to make it available here on ShazizRadio.com that actually has, you know, from different contributors, different ideas and things that are being worked on, and how-tos, and, you know, things like eattheweeds.com, you know, where you can know what is in your general vicinity that you could actually eat for food in worst case scenarios. Things that, you know, if you had this little booklet or, you know, copy or two, you know, for every different volume that maybe was put out, you'd have all these little booklets that would have something that you could benefit in the worst case scenario. You could know how to build you a generator or something like that. So we'll give it a shot. And we might even actually post a donation button on there to not raise money, but to cover cost of ink toners or whatever, the paper that actually costs to construct it, you know, just to kind of maintain it. And so if you do see a link pop up there about that, that's what that's all about, and there'll be a good explanation underneath there what any donation towards that would be, you know. And if you know somebody that needs some information on how to do something, and you know this particular book has what they need in it, then you can get it from us, and you know, we'll ship it out to you or whatever. You know, it's right now it's best of what we got as far as ideas. You know, we could show you links, you know, but there's people out there that don't have the hard copy links. They don't have the opportunity to get on there and download and make DVDs and such like that they can watch later on and be able to do some of the things. And so,
I've got an idea on this booklet. How about we ask for some volunteers from other countries that speak English and their language, for example, Russia, France,
to do translations,
and have send them a copy at our expense and translate into their home language.
That would be brilliant.
Bring up, can get out to their people.
That'd be brilliant. And if you want to contribute to this booklet, if you want to be somebody that helps get them out to people or something like that, or design something and do a how-to presentation and ship it in so that the printers can put it into the book, you know, this is how we can start spreading information to, you know, hand-to-hand to everybody out there, you know. Not everybody has opportunity to listen in on the radio show. They may not even have ever heard of the Knights of the Round Table or Mad Science or anything like that, you know. But if you send this book out and somebody sets it down at the laundromat where people go to wash their clothes and stuff, and, you know, you get bored, you look around and on the table and there's magazines, and you find this book and it shows you how to make a a geodesic dome like Muddy's always talking about, or how to build a generator, emergency backup power supply unit, or something like that, or how to do aquaponics or hydroponics. I mean, that's brilliant information that they'll pick up and take with them and share with somebody else.
You know, I just bought a book, 58 pages, large print. I mean, even somebody that needs glasses, if they want their glasses, could read this thing. It's 58 pages. And when I bought the book, I also bought the rights to reproduce it and give it away. I can't sell it, but I can give it away.
Well, there you go.
And I would like to have that translated into as many different languages as possible. So if you speak English and you can hear me, contact Shazizz. And if you speak another language fluently, contact Shazizz. I will send you a copy of this book so that you can translate it and send it back to us, please.
Well, that's the way we're going to get this thing done. That's the way we're going to steer this boat around, is to help to try to educate people, you know. it ain't going to be a book about propaganda. It ain't going to be a book about, you know, beliefs or anything like that. It's going to be a book on how-tos, how to actually do something.
Hey,
you know,
get prepared a fish, and he eats today. Teach you how to fish, and he'll eat good for the rest of his life.
Yep. And so, you know,
just steer clear of those people that say, build a man a fire and he stays warm for the today. Set a man on fire and he's warm for the rest of his life. Okay?
And essentially, I don't want to make this like a commercial kind of deal where we got ads in there for, you know, businesses and stuff like that. If you want to say, you know, hey, there's a business over there that has what you're looking for, you might give them a call, check it out, you know, and leave it at that.
Right, but, like a list of resources for doing the stuff that are in the book, like you know, how to set up better gardening and how to work with your environment to basically be able to produce the food you need, or how to get energy from the area, basically using off-the-shelf stuff, or right, even from recycled stuff to avoid, you know, being caught in a calamity.
I recently subscribed to a YouTube channel, and this guy's main deal on this YouTube channel is showing multiple uses for PVC plumbing. You know, the things that he makes out of, like bookshelves and things to put your shoes on and coat racks, and heck, he even made a blowgun out of it, you know. he made all kinds of stuff out of that, but there are, it's creative, there's multiple uses that you can use that PVC plumbing for. Everything from lawn furniture to cup holders to plant holders and stuff like that. You know, places to store like rags and things that you might need or whatever. And those are the kind of things that I'd like to show people, you know?
Yes.
How to weave a basket. That's a, you know, if you know how to do that, and you can put a little good how-to there that shows them the simple process of it, and, you know, we'll print it out and put it in this book and pass it around.
Yes.
And, you know, somewhere in the message, we'll put it on there just because. We're giving you this information just because. Pass it to somebody else. You know, just in case. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And I'm with you 100%.
I mean, it's just proof positive, people, that you can make a difference, even if you don't think you have what it takes. We're not talking about going up against the federal government with guns and violence and all that kind of stuff. We're talking about getting out there and communicating and educating with the people to make them understand, to be aware and watch and be prepared for anything that could happen. You know, natural disasters, they happen all the time. Earthquakes, floods, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And if you know what to do in certain circumstances, if you have how-tos that'll show you how to build a fire. How many people out there really know how to build a fire, you know? If you don't have access to a Zippo lighter and it runs out of fluid, and during the apocalypse you don't know how to rub two sticks together to make a fire, then you're going to get cold. You know? But if you network with your neighbors and your community, and somebody in that community knows how to build a fire, everybody can stay warm. Everybody can benefit. If somebody knows how to forage and cook and hunt and all that kind of stuff, all these disasters that end up in tragedies because people weren't prepared for them, that the governments had to step in to try to keep some sort of civilization going, wouldn't even been necessary for the governments to step in, because the citizens of the areas affected would have stepped in there and pulled together, and they would have had it under control. By the time FEMA or the government showed up, they'd be standing there peacefully having lunch together with, you know, candlelight or whatever, and saying, yeah, all right, we appreciate y'all's help, whatever you can offer, you know, we thank you for it, but, you know, we're doing good. You know, we're making the best out of a bad situation. And that's the kind of mentality that you need to put into everybody so that they don't think that there is no hope, that all is lost, you know. I watched this many times in my life. In the old days, they used to have a barn raising ceremony, and that was because every so often there'd be a farmer out there that something would happen. Maybe a cow would kick over a lantern or something like that and set fire to the barn. And the entire community would literally come together and pull the resources, nails and hammers and wood and everything. And they would go over there and they would build that farmer's barn back up so that he'd have a place for his cattle and his hay and stuff. And that's the kind of thing that needs to go on in all communities, and in even the good times, not just the bad. That you got people out there working together as a community, you know. And
you know, she says, on that barn raising thing, people back then, years ago, when they did that sort of thing, no one ever looked at it as if it were working. They had a party.
Yep.
There were a bunch of neighbors that worked together, and they didn't work. It was a party. Everybody was laughing and joking and playing around and building the barn.
Yeah.
And that big lunch. Everybody sat around and eat together, laugh, joke, cut up. It was an excuse to come together.
And even in modern day society, you will still see that the barn raising mentality. When you see maybe a neighbor, unfortunately, their house burns down and they lose everything, neighbors and people from all over the country will come together to bring them things that they need, clothes and blankets and food and water, you know, and offer them shelter or whatever.
Just today, it's still there. People just don't realize it, but it's there. Watch your neighbors the next time something happens. The first people to show up in Katrina, after Katrina, were individual people. It wasn't the government.
Yep.
They came with food, they came with water, they came with clothes. I mean, thousands of people.
Yep.
Individuals that, I mean, they took days off of work. It wasn't their jobs. And they made to feed their families to go down there and try to help out.
And that's what I believe the true heart of the majority of society is, you know. But they have to believe in themselves that they can make a difference. And one little just tiny example of what's going on. Stephen Gibbons just posted a comment in the chat room about what we were talking about making the booklet and translation. He said, scan the book using OCR software, then it can be translated easily to other languages.
Right.
I never even knew about that software. I didn't know there was software that could actually read the text and then translate it to other languages.
I know Bing does it, but Bing is not all that accurate either.
Well, you know, if it's not totally accurate, but it gets them in the right general vicinity, then we got something to work with at least, you know, that you see what I mean? Until
yes.
We can get an actual translator to do it word for word.
That's an actually great, great idea.
Thank you very much for that, Stephen, because that was brilliant. That was something I had no idea even existed, that you could actually do that. But see, this is what I'm talking about, folks. If you come over to the Knights of the Round Table and the chat rooms and you post things like this, knowledge that you can share with everybody, I've been taught something every single show. Every single time that I get out here in the social media and then talk to all these different real people from real nations all around the world, and they tell me things. And I learned so much just by listening to all these people showing, pointing out things that I never even knew existed. You know, in the alternative energy community, just when you think you know every single device out there, you find out there's somebody else working on some exotic materials or, you know, have some new information in magnetism and stuff. We have the capability to literally bring this world back into a decent reality where we can get things accomplished. And isn't that the whole purpose of all these truther communities or skeptical communities or communities that are trying to seek solutions to make the world a better place? Isn't that the all underlying beginning of the whole idea why we even set out here and do these shows, is that we want to make the world a better place? We want to put solutions in the hands of those who need, and we want to put food on the table for those who are doing without, you know? I don't live in Africa. If I lived in Africa, I would use whatever resources was available to me to help anybody in need over there.
Yes.
I would do the same in Mexico or China or wherever, you know?
Actually, yes.
And yes. I believe everybody else would too. If you know, if it all comes down to it, you know, I still believe, I still have faith in the majority of humanity being good-hearted, you know, at the core. Now, whether some people, you know, portray themselves to be total jerks and foul-mouthed heathens on a regular basis, whether they choose to act out towards whatever's going on in the world in a bad way that, you know, just kind of adds to the problem, or whether they actually say, hold on a second, let's be the voice of reason in this crowd of chaos, and let's fix this stuff before it gets out of hand. I believe that the average Joe, the majority of the average Joes out there, are like that. What do you think? Do you think I'm wrong?
I think you're sick, right? We got to try to get the people educated, that's all.
Right.
Yeah.
That OCR software has come a long ways. The big thing about it not being accurate is if it's trying to grab something that's all muddled and mussy and whatnot. If the images that you're pulling from are a good, crisp type font or something like that, they're usually pretty good at figuring that out. And they're not horrible at figuring out hand with handwriting compared to what you would think. So,
well, you know what? It's a start.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of different options too. You just have to dig through and find the one that works best for you. I know some OCR works better with handwriting than others, and others work better with you know, basically trying to figure out, like, have you ever used a CAPTCHA? Went to sign in somewhere and they said, hey, type in these letters and numbers that are in this box.
Yeah, to show you're not a robot.
Right. Those are things that end up going outside the realm of the OCR being able to figure it out. So they're using human beings to figure that information out.
Yeah, okay, because of the way they're all slanted and make you have to stare at the deal and you have to ask for some other deal because you can't see what's going on.
Right, there's a bunch of junk on it and you can't really quite figure out what's in there. So,
well, that's brilliant. Well, like I said, this is a start, man. And so if anybody out there wants to contribute to putting the first booklet together, or even, you know, stick with it from that time on, you know, gather up some information and submit it. I want everybody to write down this email address, because it's the email address that I want to use specifically for, you know, this, you know, things that are talked about on this radio network. Write down shazizradio@yahoo.com, and if you have
let them know that's shazizz. Because I've seen it spelled the wrong way, where it's two Z's, then an I, then one Z.
Yeah, shazizz@yahoo.com. And if you have something you want to submit to put into this booklet, make you an article of, we're not going to do this for commercial uses, so we don't want to advertise people's business, other than that if you want to post in that information, the business as a resource for what, you know, materials you use, that you seen that you can get these solar panels cheap, or, you know, or something that to that extent, then that's what we want.
Right. Expect too that after the article's been submitted and people review it, that if we find other resources to make it more universal, so no matter where they're at, they can get the stuff to do the project, that they're going to be listed all in there side by side.
Yeah.
That would be my choice. Is, you know, you got, if you're doing something with solar panels, I'd put every single site you can find all across the globe that people can order from directly. So that way, if someone's out in the middle of Taiwan and they want to use that project, that they want to use solar cells sourced locally, so they don't have to have them imported, then, you know, they can very well do that.
And then I think that as we put this booklet together, I think that we can actually put this booklet together in a fashion that once you receive this booklet, you can actually dismantle the booklet without tearing it apart, so that you can scan it and make copies to send out to other people. What do you think?
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Like a ringed pipe, loose leaf cookbook?
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect.
Print it out like a magazine with staple binder, but it's big enough that basically there's holes punched in it, so all you have to do is just cut the edge of the back off of it and stick it in a binder and go.
Yeah, right. And just print out copies of it that you can send around to people that need it, you know?
Exactly. We don't want to make money on it, so consequently, if we give it to somebody, they're more than willing, more than welcome to copy it and hand, give it out to friends of theirs. All we want to do is get the knowledge to the people of how to do these things.
Yeah. Well, we can make it a digital copy too that we can send out if they want it. Just email it to them, and they can print it out there on the spot too.
Yeah, we can do that as well. Because when you ship your digital file to us, so that we'll be able to print it out, we can actually add it to a file that will give everybody a copy of everything submitted.
Right.
That they can then make their own booklets and send out.
I don't want to get off the subject of this booklet, but I want to bring up a point about the aquaponics, using the fish. You're using the fish food to fertilize the plants.
Yeah.
The commercial fertilizer. And your plants are healthier. Here's the whole unbelievable secret about aquaponics. Your vegetables grow in half the time.
Yeah, and that and the plants actually filter the water back for the fish so the water don't become acidic.
Exactly. I mean, the whole thing is it's a cycle, a circle. And I mean, a head of lettuce growing in the dirt normally takes 8 weeks. In aquaponics, you can go up 4 to 5 weeks. And it's healthier. It has, other than that, a bunch of chemicals in it. I mean, I just wanted to bring that up.
Well, for all of you folks out there that have your own radio networks, if you're listening in and you like what it is that we're talking about and you want to become part of it and help us promote the idea and get other groups involved in actually helping print and distribute, booklets with information to people, that would be brilliant. I mean, if we could actually get this started, it is a first stepping stone, you know. Those folks that are like just now getting started in the music business, they started off by going out printing up flyers, and they would hang flyers on telephone poles or set them on people's cars. And where some people would get annoyed by that, other people would say, "Hey, look, there's a really good concert coming on over here," and then they'd get their information out that way. And before the mainstream media and before all the radios and TVs came around, the newspapers, back whenever they were semi-trustworthy, would put information out there for people, and, you share that newspaper with your neighbor, and they'd get some information. Now, keep in mind, people took advantage of that. But this situation, we're not trying to further an agenda. We're not trying to sell anything or propagandize anything. We're just wanting to show people how-tos.
Hey, there is an agenda. It's called eliminating tyranny. It's just not a hidden agenda.
Yeah, well, that's...
We're being upfront about this. We're not trying to run a hidden, like, money-making scheme or any of that nonsense in the background. We just want to help people get free, because the more free people there are out there, the easier it will be for the rest of us to be free, too.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder for one man to stand against an army than it is for an army to stand against one man.
So, as opposed to a harsh word like agenda, which essentially I guess we do kind of an agenda to make the world a better place, but I would say we're just trying to throw those positive pebbles in the pond, man.
Right.
But, there's other terminology that could be used as far as that goes. We got an idea, and there's a lot of ideas out there. There's a lot of brilliant information. There's things that have existed for hundreds of years that would be beneficial even in the modern day society with technology the way that it is. There's ways to get clean energy. There's ways to protect the environment, and there's ways to protect each other and be healthy and so on and so forth. There's a lot of things that are out there that, you don't hear about because, people, kind of look at it wrong. Like, for example, there's 50,000 products or more that could be made with industrial hemp. And the moment you say hemp, the very first thing somebody looks at, like Cheech and Chong or marijuana or dope, and suddenly, it's a, I don't know what.
A dirty word.
Yeah. And so... It has its own...
This thing sounds kind of like basically what it would be is a reverse mob mentality.
Yeah.
You know what your mob mentality is. You got Frankenstein up in the castle making a monster, and you get the mob with the pitchforks and the torches showing up to basically storm the castle. We're showing people how to get the pitchforks and torches out and how to use them, how they're supposed to be used instead of storming the castle.
Take that pitchfork and bale some hay and feed some cattle and teach people how the process works. A lot of folks don't know how to raise chickens and raise eggs. So if you're on a farm and you've got that knowledge and you want to contribute, show us how you do it. Show us how you keep the eggs warm and, you know, what times that you got to rotate them and turn them over. And people don't realize eggs just don't lay there, you know. Every so often you got to turn them over, you know, so that they don't grow with defects and stuff. The mother chicken does it all the time. Watch the birds in nature. They're not just sitting on them eggs. They're actually doing a process to take care of them.
Right. A lot of people don't realize this, but if you take a fresh egg that's just laid, if you never put it in the refrigerator, it will stay fresh and edible for 30 days without refrigeration.
Well, there you go, man. And that's knowledge that I didn't even have.
There's another little thing, too. If you're going to put eggs in an incubator, or you're going to have a hen set on them, you do not handle the eggs with your bare hands. The oils on your hand will clog up the pores in the shell, and the actual embryo inside breathes oxygen through the shell. So if you handle the egg with your bare hands, the oils on your hands will block the oxygen, cannot go through the shell, that egg will not hatch.
Well, see.
So time to break out the ivory that has no other added components and wash that thing off so that the pores are all open again?
Yeah.
Or something similar?
So it is. You got an idea there. I like that. I'm going to write out my own book on raising rabbits. When I was in North Carolina years ago, I raised rabbits for like 5 years, and we raised, kill, get out, and ate 250 rabbits every year. And rabbits are fit of anywhere from 30 to 40% better protein than chicken. And their poundage of food consumption and converting it into meat is better than chicken.
Well, you know, these are all things that would be great to be put into that book of information to be passed along hand-to-hand out there to the people. And you know, with free rights to anybody to go ahead and recopy it and pass it on down the road, that's the whole purpose, you know?
Yes, yes.
You don't put money down on the counter to pay something forward and then wait around for some sort of return. You put the money down on the counter and you walk away knowing that you did something decent for somebody that behind you may or may not been in need, you know?
Right. And if put it right on the glossary of the book, anybody that has possession of this book has the right to copy and distribute it freely, but they cannot sell it.
Right.
Yep.
They cannot sell it, make a profit off of it.
Right.
But they can pass it around, copy it as many times as they want, and give it freely, as we are doing.
And if everybody out there led by this example and they did their own booklets, you know, however you do your own, as long as it's putting good information out there, you know, you're throwing positive pebbles in the pond. And that's what we need. We need as much positivity in the world that we live in today. We need this so badly that people actually take the time to share their talents and skills and gifts and resources with one another. We need this terribly. Because as it stands, if everybody's reliant on the government, then you can't question the government, because if you question the government, they might take away what they just gave you, you know? And, you know, it's better to be able to take care of yourself and not need help from anybody. But there are individuals out there, even in the best or worst situations, that they fall on hard times. We're only human, and like Murphy's Law states, what can go wrong will go wrong, and 9 times out of 10 it usually does.
Yeah, the addendum to that is that not only will it go wrong, but it'll go wrong at the worst possible moment.
Exactly.
Which is essentially what happens to these people who fall on hard times. You may find people in the street that are homeless that the whole thing that caused it was like a tire blowout that turned into a big snowball effect of, you know, missed days of work, lost job, no funds to pay for this and that, and
the next job coming along. When they finally found another job, it was too late, and they just got booted from their home, and now they've got the hardship of that on top of everything else until eventually they lose everything.
Yep, and then they lose all spirit, and then by the time they finally do get some government assistance, they become accustomed to, hey, this is the best my life is going to get, and that's where they stay for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. If they're not living off of charities that are just basically giving that two fish to eat for the day and then have to come back again.
Yep.
Not actually helping them get self-sustaining again so they can win their sovereignty back again.
Once that first domino tips, the extenuating circumstances pile up to the extreme that they can't recover. And there are people out there that are in that need, that need to help.
Well, and that's the thing. you may be able to stop somebody from becoming homeless just by reaching out and lending a hand. When you hear that something like that happens, be that friend that basically helps get that tire back on that car.
Yeah,
if you need help with a tire later, whenever they're doing well and they're getting back and forth to work and not having any problems with their vehicle, they're the ones reaching out, helping you out, or the next person down the line.
That same old tire that you keep tripping over in your garage that you wish you could get rid of, but you probably shouldn't because you may need it one day. You got this tire, they need that tire, and you say, look, don't worry about it, brother. I got one over here, slightly used, but it's still got enough tread to get you by for a bit. That could be the saving grace that he's talking about.
Keep your finances flowing, they get their tire completely refurbished at some point down the road instead of losing their job because they missed 3 days of work because the tire was out or whatever,
Shazif, I remember many years ago I was living in North Carolina, but I was working in Richmond, Virginia. And I would come home on Fridays and leave early Monday morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning, to go back to work. But anyway, this one particular Friday, I was on the way home, and I was about a third of the way there, and I saw on the side of the road were two ladies and with a flat tire. So I pulled over the side of the road, of course, and I had one more because I wasn't worried, and I asked if they needed help, and they said, yeah, we don't even know how to change the tire. I said, okay, so I changed the tire for them, blah, blah, blah. Make a long story short, the lady that was driving the car, I said, thank you, sir. I do appreciate what they owe you. I said, two. She said, looked at me real funny. She got her purse out, got out $2 and handed it to me. I said, no, ma'am, I don't want money. I said, I did you a favor. I don't expect you to go find two people to do the favor, but you do have boyfriends and husbands. I expect you to have talk to them, and they're to go out and find two people that need help and help them. And they're to do the same thing, tell those people that they owe them too.
That's so brilliant.
That becomes four. That four becomes eight. That eight becomes 16, 32, 64, 128. Next thing you know, the whole world's helping each other.
That's brilliant. It's scenarios like that, the whole pay it forward thing, that is the solution. Get out there, and if you see somebody struggling and they're on the side of the bridge, who cares if they're there just for attention? They want somebody to pay attention to them. They're only wanting somebody to pay attention for a reason. Their life is either messed up or whatever. But if you can talk them down off that bridge and you can save their life and they can go do that to somebody else, can you imagine how much better of a world it would be,
Yep.
I don't know that person's really going to jump or not, or whether they're just doing it just so somebody will talk to them or whatever, but I'm not going to take that chance because their life is valuable, And if I was standing in that same pair of shoes and I was contemplating or even looking for attention, I would want somebody to stop by and at least ask me, hey, is there anything I can do to help you out or talk you out of what it looks like you're about to do? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Folks, you got things that you can do that don't even cost money. You got coats in your closets that you've outgrown that somebody else could, throw them in a washer and clean them up and pass them on to somebody in need. You could do this so easily without any cost to your, any major effort. You could take some socks and mend them up and clean them up real good. And, a mended sock is better than no sock at all.
Yep.
So, I was raised in a world where I was poor when I was growing up, and I had tons of hand-me-downs. I got my older brother's clothes when he outgrew them, and my younger brother got my clothes when I outgrew them, and so on and so forth. And we knew what it was like to go without a meal for a day or so, you know. And I swore that if I was ever in the opportunity that I would have to help somebody else not to have to live through that experience of not being able to eat for a day or two, or even worse, that I would do whatever it took, even if it meant that I would sacrifice a meal for my day to give them my plate so that they could eat. Because I ate the day before, you know, and I can make it to the next day just so somebody could have something.
Shit, sis, when I was a kid, every once in a while, we wouldn't have anything on the table to eat but cornbread and milk. And it was a treat, because that's what my parents told us. All right, kids have been good this week, so we're going to give you a treat. We're going to have get cornbread and milk for dinner. So all of us kids, we thought this was great. I was in my late 20s when it finally dawned on me. We made cornbread and milk a lot in the wintertime. My father was an iron worker. When it was snowing and ice or rain, he couldn't work. They didn't say, okay, we don't have anybody for food this week, so we're going to have to eat cornbread and milk. No, they told us it was a treat. And so, being kids, we believed it. And it was great. It was fantastic. Just because you're down in your drunk or things that happen doesn't mean you have to get down in the mouth about it.
Yep.
That's another way to look at it. It's all about attitude. And that's what we're trying to do with this booklet. We're trying to give people an attitude that, hey, I can do this.
There's a saying out there that sounds maybe kind of corny, but if you really sit down and contemplate on it, you know, it really makes sense. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
Exactly. No joke.
So, we'll teach people how to make lemonade. You know?
Hey, and when your grapes go sour, make some fine wine.
Yep, there you go.
Oh, Lord, I love it.
Well,
it's
folks,
about attitude.
There's possibilities out there. There's lots of information out there, you know. We don't have to hate one another because we're different. We don't have to hate one another because we don't always agree on stuff. But what we do have to do is we have to live together. And in this world, in this day and age, with the things that are going on, or even if it's only a perception of what's really happening, even if it's all lies and propaganda, you know, we still got to live in this world together. And the only way to defeat the beast that's eating us all alive is to starve that beast from everything that we sacrifice to that beast all the time, every day, even if it's only just the words coming out of your mouth. When you get frustrated and you start cursing at the beast, you know, hey, the beast ain't feeling bad because you're cursing. You got him right where you want him. Hey, I got this guy so upset. Why do you think these people are out there trolling people? Because they know they can get under your skin and they get a rise out of it. You know? And so all the hardships that we have to go through to present this information to people, all the names that's been called to us, and the degrading comments that are made on videos that we do because they're not perfect or whatever, you know, it's a hard struggle for an individual to, you know, internalize, to try to get a grip on, you know, hey, am I wasting my time here? Should I just get up and walk away? I've had shows that literally brought me to tears, folks, but because I honestly believe deep down in my heart that there is resolution, there is a remedy out there for everybody, and that together we can bring that to the table, and together we can feed the hungry, and we can shelter the homeless, and we can actually make a difference that would bring about, if not a literal heaven on earth, at least a better life to live in, and a better world to leave our children as we exit wherever it is we're at.
Mortal coil?
Yeah. So that's pretty much all I got to say, man. I think I pretty much said everything that was on my mind and heart today, and you guys had contributed so much. But, you know, it's that time again, got to ask you. We'll go around the table and let everybody have their last say. Raymond, you want to go first?
I think we just about covered everything. I'm really looking forward to making this booklet.
Well, we got to make it happen, you know.
Yeah. Yes. Nothing, myself.
Nothing gets done until you get off the couch and do it.
You got it. Okay.
And what about you, Thomas?
I'm in agreement with what he said.
Alright, everybody, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. You hold our feet to the fire, and you keep asking us on a regular basis when that book's going to be ready for distribution. And, you know, if you want to be a contributor, if you want to send files of your article that you put together on a how-to, how to sew, how to patch a torn pair of jeans, or how to raise chickens or rabbits or anything like that. If you got the time to sit down and put an article together, we got the time to put it in a book form and start passing it out to the world. And we're going to put this book form in a manner at which you can actually dismantle it and be able to put it on a copy machine and reprint and take it as far as you can take it on your side. If we all take this to the limit, we can put enough information out there so that the average Joe knows that there are other individuals on the opposite side of the globe, on your side of the globe, that are actually doing something positive to set this world right, as opposed to where the direction it's headed right now. You know, what better can I say? I mean,
right.
It's just, we got to do it. Hold our feet to the fire. Remember the words coming out of my mouth that, you know, when's the book going to be ready? And let's get this thing done. Because...
just don't read his lips.
Yeah. Well, when my lips start going, it's kind of hard probably to keep up. You'd have to get one of those things that can actually measure the RPMs or something like that. Oh, man. Anyway, folks... You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. If you believe what we're talking about, if this is where your heart stands as well, please do us the honor and pass it on to your social media networks and get people to come over in these chat rooms and get on these radio networks. If you want to be a radio host on this network and you want to put out positive information that's going to actually do something to make this world a better place, you know, come on. It's that simple. It's that simple. It's just showing up. Put the links in the chat room. Pass them over to your friends. Tell people what we're talking about. And let's make this world a better place. It's our only choice. You know, either that, we wait for it all to fall apart. We take up arms and we repeat the history of the past. I don't want to go there. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Knights of the Round Table.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony. Be quiet! But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, read us where we're able. We do routine to call the scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.